Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters for today, Wednesday the 10th of August. I am your host, Connor, and I am delighted to be joined by a GB News host and the most base man of faith I know, Father Calvin Robinson. How are you, sir?
That is a very kind introduction. Thank you.
That's all right. You're doing the Lord's work in bringing moralization back to the media. Today, we'll be delighted to discuss how the FBI have crossed the Rubicon and declared war on President Trump, how we're all living on a drag planet, unfortunately, and I'll be putting Calvin through that, and the tragedy of Artie Battersby. So, I suppose we'd get into it, shouldn't we? On Monday, on the anniversary of Watergate, when Richard Nixon resigned, the FBI raided Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. Today, it was ruled that the IRS would hand Trump's tax returns over to House Democrats. And breaking, just as we went live, Trump is expected to be deposed today by the New York Attorney General's office in connection with their probe into his business dealings. It's a pretty dark day when the alphabet agencies coordinate to persecute a former president. This coincides with the also persecution of Trump's supporters and the ones that wandered into the Capitol on their guided tour. It brings us ever closer to the civil war that Tim Pool has tirelessly predicted. Gutting the deep state seems to be Trump's only route to peace at this point. And speaking of a mass exodus of politics, if you'd like to subscribe to LotusEaters.com, we have a contemplations that Josh and I did on who should stay and who should go, in the words of The Clash, on the UK and US's right. We go through the ideologies and we even actually get into a little bit of faith. And I wasn't successful in converting Josh, but we'll get there incrementally. We've got contemplations on abortion coming out very soon, and it will be very revealing on our personal spiritual predilections. So, if we go straight to regrettably, the Washington Post coverage of this, they've been doing a bit-by-bit examination of all of the events that have unfolded over the last few days, and I've eliminated some of the editorializing, but we'll just do a brief summary of what's happened. So, in January, the National Archives and Records Administration retrieved 15 boxes of documents and other items from Mar-a-Lago that archives officials said should have been turned over when Trump left the White House. Now, bear in mind, the president does have the ability to declassify documents, so it doesn't seem that's in keeping with this. It could have been that some documents got mixed up, but we don't know yet. That could be a violation of Presidential Records Act, which requires the preservation of memos, letters, notes, emails, faxes, and other written communications related to a president's official duties. The inventory of unclassified items in the boxes that were recovered earlier this year from Mar-a-Lago is roughly 100 pages long, according to a person familiar with the document. They always use that. Descriptions of items that were improperly taken to Mar-a-Lago include a cocktail napkin, a phone list, charts, slide decks, mirror letters, memos, maps, talking points, a birthday dinner menu, schedules, and more. So they seem quite menial items. This person said, speaking on the condition of anonymity. So when the raid happened on Monday, I believe it was about a dozen FBI agents raided the Mar-a-Lago residence. President Trump was actually in New York. He's currently been mainly residing in Bedminster in New Jersey at his golf resort. He's been hosting GOP officials for a strategy dinner last night because, of course, all of the agencies are going for him at once. It's actually been suggested that he's staying in Bedminster so that he avoids running in the same state as a resident as Ron DeSantis should he choose to pick him for VP. There's also suggestions that he might be picking Larry Elder because he announced a potential presidential bid at CPAC and spoke about it on Tim Pool's podcast the other night. And just to pick up some of Jack Posobiec's reporting, it's not in the links, but he's been tweeting about this furiously on Human Events Daily. Apparently, the FBI director Christopher Wray had signed off on this last week, so there was foreknowledge. The chief of staff Ron Klain had informed Joe Biden of Attorney General Merrick Garland's plan to raid the Mar-a-Lago residence to secure an indictment of Trump. It was a purposeful raid to seek a prosecution while Biden was quarantining for his two successive bouts of COVID. Get boosted, of course. Reminder, Garland was also the pick for Supreme Court in the latter days of Obama's presidency, so this could be revenge for being robbed of that position. And after the January 6th hearings, it seems like nothing's off the table in terms of prosecuting a former president. Wants to stop the Dems from issuing a summons for a sort of kangaroo court. How have you felt over the course of the January 6th hearings? Have you followed any of this nonsense, or have you been like most Americans and not bothered?
No, I have. It's absolutely outstanding. The fact that the sitting government is persecuting the opposition. I can't think of any other democratic Western nation that has persecuted a former president in this way.
They have been saying it's pretty unprecedented, and we'll come on to some tweet reactions later, but
oppressing your opponents is the sign of a dictatorship.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of when AOC drew up a list of former Trump officials and things like that, and she said, oh, we cannot let them live this down. Yeah exactly. It sounds like you're just going to round them up and hunt them.
Like, live what down? Being having a different political persuasion to you? Like, what is the offense?
Oh, we can't allow peace in the Middle East to happen. I'm sure the military-industrial contract's bottom line will not allow that one. But
I mean, Trump did say himself, didn't he, in reality, they're not after me, they're after you, I'm just in the way. And I think that was spot on.
You're presaging part of the segment, yes. So we actually have a statement from President Trump himself. He says there are dark times for this nation. My Mar-a-Lago home in Palm Beach, Florida is currently under siege, raided and occupied by a large group of FBI agents. Nothing like this has ever happened to a president of the United States, as you said quite rightly. After working and cooperating with the relevant government authorities, this unannounced raid on my home was not necessary or appropriate. It is prosecutorial misconduct, the weaponization of the justice system, and an attack by radical left Democrats who desperately don't want me to run for president in 2024, especially based on recent polls, and who will likewise do anything to stop Republicans and conservatives in the upcoming midterm elections. Well, kind of, because they've actually been funding some of the more Trump candidates because they think they're Pied Piper candidates to beat, but I hope that bites them in the backside. Such an assault could only take place in a broken third world country. Sadly, America has now become one of those countries, corrupt at a level not seen before. They even broke into my safe. What is the difference between this and Watergate, where operatives broke into the Democrat National Committee? Here in reverse, the Democrat broke into the home of the 45th President of the United States. And surprisingly, considering they fact-check him constantly, none of that is untrue. The political persecution of President Donald J. Trump has been going on for years, with the now fully debunked Russia scam. I love the Trinity there. Impeachment hoax one, impeachment hoax two, and so much more. It just never ends. It is the political targeting at the highest level. Hillary Clinton was allowed to delete and acid wash 33,000 emails after they were subpoenaed by Congress. Absolutely nothing has happened to hold her accountable. The locker up chant didn't work, unfortunately. She even took antique furniture and other items from the White House. I like her just like sprint, the image of her sprinting into the moving van with all her favourite drapes. It's like Carrie Johnson scraping the wallpaper off number 10 when they get ousted. I stood up to America's bureaucratic corruption. I restored power to the people and truly delivered for our country. Fact check true, like we have never seen before. The establishment hated it. Now, as they watch my endorsed candidates win big victories and see my dominance in all polls, they're trying to stop me in the Republican Party once more. The lawless political persecution and witch hunt must be exposed and stopped. I will continue to fight for the great American people. So, unsurprising that Trump's so upset when they do plan to break into his home. And if we can go on to the next one, they're not just targeting him, they're targeting sitting congressmen who are his allies. So Jeff Robbins, a former federal prosecutor and congressional, I'll try that word again, investigative counsel.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, I know. Say that three times when you're drunk. This was not a search conducted in the pro shop. It is a search conducted in the former president's residence and office. The former president is a target of this investigation. It is unprecedented that a president or former president is the target of a criminal investigation that results in the search warrant being executed at his residence. Yes, it is absolutely unprecedented. But on the other hand, the evidence of criminality is also unprecedented. And this is the frustration. It's what evidence of criminality have they actually got?
Yeah. So we've seen the list of items that they've declared that have been found at his residence. A cocktail napkin, a birthday dinner menu, talking points, and all of it was apparently unclassified. Now, I don't know if that means that it was once classified and then declassified, or it was always just not classified information, but it seems to be very non-harmful.
Yeah, spurious. Yeah.
Mundane.
And one would think that Trump would have declassified it, given that's the president's authority. And as you pointed out, when Hillary Clinton made off with hers, the Secretary of State doesn't have that power. So she violated her oath of office entirely, but he was well within his rights to possess many of these things.
But Trump is famous for working from home. He didn't like working at the White House quite a lot of the time. So I think they're just using this as a tool to get to him, which is fantastic for him, because this is going to help him. I think the Democrats have just secured a win for the Republicans in the next election.
God bless. I hope so. So then Robbins pointed to other determinations that Trump was likely involved in criminal activity. A Georgia investigation into Trump's efforts to pressure the Secretary of State there to find more votes, as well as ruling from a California-based federal judge who in March found it was more likely than not that Trump committed crimes in his effort to stay in power. So the ruling of one judge who doesn't like him from a Democrat stronghold, and an investigation into a conversation that we have the full tape of, at which in no point does Trump tell him to fabricate votes and simply tells him to look into what he believed, don't worry YouTube, we're not saying the election was stolen, were election irregularities in Georgia. So they're saying, oh, we're doing investigations into him. We definitely think he's guilty in the first place, but they haven't turned up anything yet. So
he's guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah, unfortunately so. We do have kangaroo courts in America, it seems. Now you have a totally separate federal judge, separate from the first one, who has found there is probable cause to believe that the former president has committed a very specific federal crime or number of crimes, this fella added, that does not have any indication of a witch hunt. So were the FBI and all of these judges not involved in things like the Page and Strzok case, the Steele dossier, the P-tape, the supposed N-word tape, which never materialized, Russiagate, etc., I might be inclined to believe this nomological network of the judicial system has said, oh, in different states, we're kind of suspicious of him. But until they come up with any evidence for all of their claims, I'm just going to call bull. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the raiding of the safe, Brian Kilmeade had a chat with Eric Trump. So we've got two tweets here. Just spoke to Eric Trump. Nothing in the safe. FBI agents told 30 approximately, so that's higher than the 12 previously reported, raided on behalf of Nation Archives. This is outrageous. This has to have come from POTUS and or someone in the White House. And we know now that Joe Biden was apparently briefed well ahead of time. If we go on to the next tweet. More from Eric Trump. When President Trump's lawyers scrambled to raid, she was told to stand in the corner and demanded they shut off the security cameras. How very Jeffrey Epstein of you. They didn't, my view. Sounds like how they handled Manafort, Navarro, and Roger Stone. FBI out of control. White House lost their minds. So
this is what concerns me the most, the lack of transparency. The fact that Trump wasn't there, the fact that his lawyer was not allowed to be present, and the fact that they wanted the cameras off. Why? What are they doing that's so secretive?
Yeah, well, weren't we told with the Patriot Act, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to worry about.
Well, indeed.
Isn't that convenient? Well, I would be interested when, if the security cameras weren't shut off, this inevitably leaks, yeah, because everything seems to these days. So I wonder how much footage we'll have to pour over the conduct of these particular FBI officers. There's also, they're targeting Trump's allies. If we go to the next one from Reuters, Congressman Perry says the FBI agents have seized his cell phone as well in conjunction with the January 6th hearings. And he's the Freedom Caucus chairman. So the fellow that's presiding over, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz, etc. The very dissident Republicans who have been stalwartly pro-Trump even after January 6th. Mm-hmm. Then we've got a ruling today, as I presaged. The House committee can now obtain Trump's tax returns from the IRS. So all of that meltdown that Rachel Maddow had so long ago, now we're going to finally see the results, I suppose, even though they amounted to nothing before.
How is this related to the raid? Is this just another target?
Is this just another story happening exactly at the same time from another alphabet agency, which is totally unrelated.
So it's not like they're going after the former president at all because he's going to run again.
No. He's just done so much wrong that we're all doing it on the same week.
But what I find amazing about this is the IRS have just hired 87,000 new employees to try and find more tax, not just from Donald Trump, but from everyone else in America. Yep. Surely they could save money by not spending it on hiring thousands and thousands of people to look for tax, actually cut people's taxes, and then they would increase the revenue of the country as a whole. What backwards thinking?
Well, I would suggest that they're expecting so many documents to pour through that they've got to have a lot of inquisitors to go through the former president's tax return. So I'm sure half of that 87,000 will be looking to pinch pennies from the American pocketbook, but the other half will be looking for reasons to prosecute the former president.
It's ridiculous.
Yes. So it was a 3-judge panel. A federal appeals court had ruled that the Democrats' House Ways and Means Committee can obtain Donald Trump's tax returns from the IRS. While the committee said it expects to receive the returns immediately, it's not clear how that process will unfold, how quickly it will, because Trump can still technically appeal the ruling. But if he's fighting many legal battles on all fronts, his resources are going to be stretched thin, like butter over too much bread.
Surely Americans can see through this multiple approach attack on Donald Trump. Surely they can see what's happening from the government and see the terrible anti-democratic approach of the Democratic Party.
Well, one would hope, because the Real Clear Politics polling average seems to have Biden at record low approval ratings and likely that Trump will trounce him. And even though there are other Republicans wading into the midst and some commentators specifically, and we know how the media ecosphere can sometimes inhibit your views, say, Ron DeSantis is a surefire pick, etc. And I like Ron, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But the overwhelming majority of the Republican Party still want Trump.
But this is the thing. So there's a statute that says that if he's found guilty of a crime, he can't stand it. I think that's why they're doing this.
Definitely.
But either way, the Republicans win. So either Trump comes off as a victim, oppressed by the deep state, which he is, and he gets a massive rating, massive vote out of that, or they actually do prevent him from running and someone like DeSantis runs instead, and he will swim it as well. He will absolutely get a landslide victory.
Yeah, for either man, the swamp just got 10 feet deeper, but they're both committed to draining it. And if they campaign on that, you've just given them a lot of ammunition. So this is possibly the most absurd act of deep state desperation. Exclusive photos, Trump's telltale toilet.
Oh, gosh.
So I don't know if you're familiar with Maggie Haberman at the New York Times. One of the most anti-Trump.
I try to avoid the New York Times at all.
I don't blame you. Their paywall is bad enough. I don't know why you'd be so expensive on toilet paper. Looks like Trump's used some of it himself. But Haberman's writing a book about Trump that's reported that White House staff periodically found wobs of paper clogging a toilet. Well, they don't look that clogged to me, but why are you following the president into a toilet stall to take photos?
Who is going into the toilet after the president and taking photographs? That is very sketchy. That's an untrustworthy character, first and foremost.
It's very
odd. I would have assumed that the president had his own toilet, to be honest.
No. Well, There was one point down here where it says, oh, one of them's like a commode or something like that.
Why would the president feel the need to flush papers down the toilet anyway?
It's not like he's Max Schreck from Batman Returns and the penguin's sitting there painstakingly taping it together to get dirt on him.
But are they watching him at all times? Can he not just, if he wants to get rid of something, can he not just shred it like a normal human being?
But also, why would Trump take paper into the toilet when he's notorious for tweeting on the bog?
True.
He's got his phone in hand more than anything. And if you look at the handwriting, it doesn't look like official documents, does it? No. I mean, we could be completely wrong here, but it just looks like Sharpie scrawled on a piece of paper that could have been faked by blooming anyone. I'm not accusing anyone of faking anything, but
yeah.
It doesn't look very reputable. And then Axios had decided to editorialize in this article, and he said, oh, Trump denied this and called Haberman, whose New York Times coverage he follows compulsively, a maggot. Fact check, true. Trump spokesman Taylor Bukovich told Axios, you have to be pretty desperate to sell books if pictures of paper in a toilet bowl is part of your promotional plan. The media never sinks so low. So then we can look at the press and political reaction to these stories, of course. We've got the House Judiciary GOP, headed up by Jim Jordan, who's called up Merrick Garland and Chris Wray to be called before Congress for questioning. He's saying the IRS is coming for you, as you said. The DOJ is coming for you, as they called parents protesting school boards domestic terrorists. The FBI is coming for you. No one is safe from political punishment in Joe Biden's America. It does smack very much of the Stasi.
So that's it right there. That is it. The politicization of the American judiciary, as well as the other, what do you call them, the alphabet bodies?
Yes, alphabet organizations.
It is just like over here that we have the civil service and all of these organizations and institutions that are in favor with Tony Blair's line of thinking. Mm. Over in America, they're all in favor with Barack Obama's line of thinking. And yes. I wouldn't be surprised if he was involved in any of this, to be honest with you.
I wouldn't be shocked. We can't accuse, but they're definitely ideologically captured by the sort of global progressive hegemon. Mm. And they're acting in coordination with it. And this is like when, for example, Trump tried to pull troops out of Syria and Afghanistan. They said, oh, Mr. President, there's no troops left in Syria. And it turns out like military generals are lying and said, no, we still have them stationed over there. We just lied to the commander in chief. So they've got no scruples about that. I agree. It is treasonous. And let's hope that he returns to enact vengeance, shall we? So if we go over to the next one, Ron DeSantis, our man, he's called Banana Republic, and as pointed out, that Hunter Biden is being treated with kid gloves. Perhaps yes. Don't meant to mention kid and Hunter Biden in the same sentence. It might be a bit unsavory. Too low, I know.
But why is this not the biggest story of all time? The fact that the president's son has been caught doing nefarious things that I won't even mention because I don't know what the YouTube censors are going to be like, but It was all covered up before the election, and now it's coming out as actually most of it was probably true, but no one's talking about it.
Covered up explicitly by the FBI, which we'll get indeed. Onto as well.
I don't understand how people aren't in arms about this.
Well, there was a poll, I believe, right before the election that said swing voters, if they were notified that the Hunter Biden laptop story was true and hadn't been suppressed by Twitter, would not have voted for Joe.
Yeah.
So despite election fortification, many voters may have not given Joe Biden the most amount of votes in American history.
This is big tech corruption.
Absolutely. So then there are apparently some sane takes from Democrats. Shocking. Notorious money spender Andrew Yang says, I'm no Trump fan, but I want him as far away from the White House as possible, about as far as you, mate. But a fundamental part of this appeal has been it's him against a corrupt government establishment, as you said, Calvin. Mm. This raid strengthens that case for millions of Americans who will see this as unjust persecution.
Yes, because it is.
Yeah, it gives ammunition. And then on to the next one, another Andrew, notorious institutional murderer, Andrew Cuomo. The DOJ must immediately explain the reason for its raid, and it must be more than a search for inconsequential archives, or it will be viewed as a political tactic and undermine any future credible investigation and the legitimacy of the January 6th investigations. Now, you lost me on that last part, because the January 6th investigation is a show trial.
But this gives me hope that people are seeing it for what it is,
yeah.
Even people on the other side of the political divide.
Yeah, well, I think he's just terrified of being investigated himself over the nursing home controversy, but all the rest of that is totally fair.
There's Andy commenting below.
It is, wonderful. I love Andy, it's fantastic.
He's a good guy.
So, on the next part, Axios's coverage is just laughable. It's saying, why it matters. Trump and the American right mobilized to use the raid as a symbol of government overreach and political persecution with speed, ferocity, and fury not seen since he left office. The FBI and the Justice Department have said nothing official about what happened. The Republicans instantly moved to portray the raid as President Biden trying to hurt potential 2024 opponent. So Republicans pounce is what this is being turned into. The Guardian did the same thing and said, sorry, John, didn't put that one in there. GOP backlash to the DOJ rather than the rights violations committed by the FBI. It was the big leading story. But then when Trump, for example, calls up Volodymyr Zelensky and says, maybe you should look into Biden for being on camera, admitting getting a prosecutor fired for his son's business dealings, suddenly the story becomes about Trump again rather than what actually happened. We're just seeing it here.
It's a great deflection, isn't it?
Yeah, the media apparatus are circling around their guy and and reinforcing the narrative and saying, oh, don't look at the man behind the curtain.
Well, we saw that over the COVID vaccines as well. Not just the media, but also the Democrats were all saying, oh, no, don't take this COVID vaccine. It looks dangerous. The Trump vaccine. But as soon as Trump left office, they've pushed that vaccine harder than anyone.
Yeah. And of course, YouTube, there is nothing wrong with the vaccine. The Democrats were anti-vaxxers and they were wrong. Please don't kill us. So why is this happening now? Well, perhaps it's because Nancy Pelosi's looking terrible. She said China's one of the freest societies in the world after her Taiwan trip.
Yeah, so is this her penance for visiting Taiwan?
Definitely. And this shows that all the Republicans, like even like Lindsey Graham, clapping like seals, saying, oh, Speaker Pelosi's doing the right thing here. As we reported on our weekend segment, she went over there for the semiconductor subsidies because they're building a plant in Arizona very soon. And Taiwan is the leading manufacturer of semiconductors, which her husband and her son reportedly have a lot of stocks in. She has a stake in making sure that she can still make money from that. And her
always
stocks
comes down
bets.
To money with the Democrats, doesn't it?
Yep.
Who was it I saw on the way here said that they should replace made in Taiwan with made in China?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I'll have to look that up later.
It might have been Eric Swalwell because he was banging a Chinese spy. So then there's, as you have pre-read, in the next one, Fox reporting on a Clinton-backed lawyer who's been tweeting some rather revelatory mask-off moments. Mark Elias, a top lawyer for Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign, said that former President Trump could be disqualified from making another presidential bid because of US Code Title 18, Section 2071, which states, whoever having the custody of any such record, proceeding, map, book, document, paper, or other thing willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, falsifies, or destroys the same, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years, or both, and shall forfeit his office and be disqualified from holding any office under the United States.
Right.
It's an obvious effort to indict him to stop him running in 2024 because they are soiling their pants at the prospect.
So I was talking to Jason Miller from Getter about this last night, and he said that the Constitution trumps this statute, actually, so it won't be relevant, fortunately. But it does show how afraid they are of Donald Trump running again.
Yeah, they're trying petrified. To look into every legal loophole possible. Yeah.
That's not democracy.
No. Well, speaking of corrupt judicials, have you seen who issued the search warrant by any chance?
Yeah, this I'm a little dubious of. This all of the links to the lawyer and Epstein.
Yes. Yes. Well, there are some very shady things going on here, which we will cover. There are still allegations, of course, but it doesn't look good if you'd like a free and transparent democracy, let's put it that way, or republic, technically. So we can go on to the next one from the National Pulse. It's Judge Bruce E. Reinhardt. They do slate him for donating to Barack Obama and Jeb Bush's presidential campaigns. It might indicate, as you said, that there is some interests from the Democrat apparatus interfering with this, like Barack Obama, for example. But we must remember, of course, that many Obama voters flip for Trump. So that's not necessarily an issue.
I'm surprised that judges are allowed to donate to political parties.
Yeah, considering he's appointed as well. That's quite surprising. Isn't that just funneling taxpayer cash towards... America, you have a strange legal system. As Miami Herald has reported, on October the 23rd, 2007, federal prosecutors in South Florida were in the midst of tense negotiations to finalize a plea deal with accused sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, now convicted. A senior prosecutor in their office was quietly laying out plans to leave the U.S. attorney's office after 11 years. This would be Mr. Reinhardt. On that date, as emails were flying between Epstein's lawyers and federal prosecutors, Reinhardt, now a federal magistrate, opened a limited liability company in Florida that established what would become his new defense practice. And that LLC shared the same address as the headquarters for Epstein's lead counsel office. Quite shady. He then switched sides. By the end of the year, Reinhardt had resigned his post in the Southern District of Florida. Within days, on January the 2nd, 2008, he was hired to represent several of Epstein's accused accomplices who would later, like Epstein, receive federal immunity for allegedly trafficking underage girls, which he definitely did before he was suicided. In a 2011 sworn affidavit submitted in the civil case, Reinhardt denied he did anything unethical or improper. He asserted, under the penalty of perjury, that he was not part of the team involved in Epstein's investigation and therefore was not privy to any of the confidential information about the case. He couldn't leak it back and forth, of course. But 2 years later, Reinhardt's former supervisors in the US Attorney General's office filed a court paper contradicting him, saying that while Bruce E. Reinhardt was an assistant in the US Attorney's office, he learned confidential, non-public information about the Epstein matter. He also then went in Newsmax interviews appearing to defend Epstein by downplaying allegations of the financier and his role in trafficking underage prostitutes.
Okay, so there was a clear conflict of interest there. Because at first I was thinking everyone deserves a lawyer, but it seems like he's been overstepping the mark.
Yes.
And the bigger issue for me here is that the FBI clearly have the list of clients, Epstein's clients, that hasn't been released publicly. Yes. Nothing seems to have been done about it, yet they're willing to chase Donald Trump over a napkin.
Yeah, and Ghislaine Maxwell was indicted behind closed doors for child sex trafficking.
Who is she trafficking to? Who are the FBI? Who are the Democratic Party? Who are these people protecting?
It certainly wouldn't be former President Bill Clinton, who had a painting of him in Monica Lewinsky's dress.
It wouldn't be Bill Gates either, would it?
No, it couldn't be. Are you saying that he's the paragon of vaccination is not an upstanding member of society, Galvin? How could you? Conspiracy theorists.
There are people online who are calling the Antichrist. I'm not one of those people, but...
Well, if you wanted a candidate. So let's look at where the FBI's allegiances lie, shall we, in the final part of this segment. So the FBI knowingly discredited the Hunter Biden laptop story. Fantastic. And this is from the New York Post, who was censored. The top Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Chuck Grassley's July letter to FBI Director Christopher Wray said, Tim Tibble, Assistant Special Agent in charge of the FBI's DC field office, and FBI Supervisory Intelligence Analyst Brian Alton were allegedly involved in a scheme to undermine derogatory information connected to Hunter Biden by falsely suggesting his disinformation. Alton, quote, opened an assessment which was used by an FBI headquarters, FBI HQ team, to improperly discredit negative Hunter Biden information as a disinformation campaign and caused investigative activity to cease.
But you can literally see him there with the kids.
Yes, but it was Russian disinformation, don't you know?
I don't understand how it's Russian and how it's disinformation. Why do the Russians always get blamed anyway? Yeah, they did this with Trump and it was proven nonsense.
Yeah, it was actually that the opposition research was... paid for by the Clinton campaign, but yeah. They were never raked over the coals. And when they had a recent lawsuit over that, again, behind closed doors, no, found not guilty, even though it was demonstrable the Clinton campaign was involved. But no, Russia, Russia, Russia. Verified and verifiable derogatory information on Hunter Biden was falsely labeled as disinformation, Grassley wrote, and he cited the unnamed whistleblowers from inside the FBI who gave him this information. And we know this was the case because Adam Schiff trotted out and Brian's Brian Seltzer on CNN said, oh, it's Russian hoax, etc. And well, we know that was untrue. We know you were lying when you said it. Ridiculous.
But people aren't critical thinkers anymore. People are not looking and seeing anymore. I mean, I'm not saying this just because I'm of the right wing of politics, but yes. Biden and his family are not good people. No. We've got plenty of footage of Biden sniffing the hair and inappropriately touching young girls. We've seen footage of Hunter Biden with, again, very, very young girls in inappropriate attire. Yes. And we've heard the rumors of his daughter's diary where she says she had inappropriate showers with her father. This is not a good family. These are not good people. And I'm not saying that just because they're left wing. No. I don't understand how people can see this and still vote for them and still support them and still encourage them.
Yeah,
there's too much evil going on.
Personal failures of the corpse currently occupying the office have trickled down to the American people in terms of bad policy and bad leadership. And at his own personal enrichment, for example, Hunter Biden shared a phone number on his bank account with his dad. And how do you think his brother got all of those house building contracts in Iraq? Very suspicious.
Let's not mention Ukraine.
No, definitely not. No, it's bastion of democracy with definitely no neo-Nazi connections there. So if we go to the next one and just into Newsweek, James Comey, the former FBI director that Trump fired and was investigated over during the Russia probe for misconduct, which he was definitely right to do so, had actually prepared his statement exonerating Hillary Clinton before she, you know, when she purged the 33,000 emails before the investigation had ended and the FBI had compiled all their information about it, which is just utterly insane. And so he set this crazy arbitrary standard that shouldn't have existed in criminal prosecution, where he went through all of the information right by the election, and Democrats actually cried that he cost her the election because of this, that she had demolished all of these documents. She'd smashed phones with hammers. She'd, quote, bleached her servers. And then right at the end, he said, oh, but she didn't mean to. So it's all right. We're not going to.
How did she do it accidentally? And how did he know this before investigating?
That's a fantastic question that I'm sure the Democrat apparatus will give us a brilliant and transparent answer.
You just know if Trump did any of this, he'd be in jail right now.
Yeah. It's the same that Don Jr. got up and said at the TPU USA conference. He said, if even one iota of what Hunter Biden had done had been caught on me, you'd know that it would be all over the headlines. And they always accuse him, oh, he's doing bumps of coke backstage, etc. Never been caught. Cameras everywhere. Never.
But this deep state stuff has been conspiracy theories for a long, long time. And now it's all out in the open. They're transparent about everything they're doing. Yeah. And people still don't care.
Yeah, it's the lifelong mandarins in there who want to keep their comfy jobs and their comfy chairs. And so as soon as there's a threat to that, for example, when like the likes of JFK say, tear up the CIA and scatter its parts to the winds, well, suddenly you take a drive out in Dallas and boom, you're gone, aren't you? So Hillary Clinton then gloats about getting away with this, just to rub some salt in our wound. Go to the next one. She's photoshopped her merch onto an old photo of herself when she didn't look like a like a deflated balloon of a pug dog.
Bless her.
The hilarious thing was, and Crowder covered this on his live stream yesterday, Rudy Giuliani, is that CNN's coverage said that the RNC was sending fundraising texts for the midterm, citing Biden's DOJ raid as a partisan attack. And they said that fundraising on this issue was fairly unprecedented. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton, gloating about the fact she got away with actual crimes and raising money for, well, of course, the Clinton Foundation needs more money.
They can't help but gloat about their wicked ways, can they? They cannot help it.
No, it's always it's not happening. Okay, it's happening, and then it's a good thing. And clearly she said, oh, I didn't do anything, and then now I did it, but it was good that I did. So I'd just like to move on to the one policy petition we'd like to endorse, and that is from Marjorie Taylor Greene. At this point, just defund the FBI. Strip them of their power. Utterly gut them. They are a partisan political apparatus. They are unfit for their stated oath of office. They've raided Rudy Giuliani, Roger Stone, James O'Keefe. As I said, they called parents protesting school board meetings domestic terrorists over the DOJ. But then they've protected Hunter Biden, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Paul Pelosi, Eric Swalwell, Andrew Cuomo, Gretchen Whitmer, Dr. Levin, etc.
Yeah, but it is a bit simplistic. We can't just defund, or they can't just defund the FBI. What they need to do is depoliticize all of these public bodies. Because they shouldn't have a political stance. It's the same over here. What they need to do is drain the swamp, as Donald Trump always said.
I think much like the opinions of the current Tory leadership candidates, whether they do it or not, it's in many respects hold a quid pro quo for their funding until they clean up their act.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if that means the threat of defunding, I'm definitely all for that. So we obviously, unlike the conservative leadership election, the Americans don't allow foreigners to involve themselves and vote. So we don't actually have a say in who you guys vote for in 2024. But yeah, as Englishmen whose homes are our castles, I think we deeply resonate with President Donald Trump's
outreach. Well, we keep an eye on our former colonies, don't we, to make sure they're doing okay.
Yeah,
they're not doing okay right now, so we're worried about them.
This is why you guys shouldn't have just thrown the tea in the harbour. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was a bad mistake. You're regretting it now, aren't you?
Yeah, but if we wandered across the southern border into a Democrat stronghold and were somehow handed a ballot paper that we could definitely not fill out, would you be inclined to vote for President Trump at this point?
If I was American, I would definitely vote for Donald Trump or whoever the Republican candidate is.
Oh, yeah, I'd be happy to vote for whoever the Republican candidate is, and Ron DeSantis has done a great job.
DeSantis is fantastic, and so is Larry Elder.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Larry Elder was actually my red pill moment, funnily enough. It was his interview with Dave Rubin, and we started talking about his father. I was like, wow, this is actually really important. And
you should watch his movie. It's fantastic.
The first one has just become free on his website.
Oh,
yeah, and the second one is coming out. So I actually advise everyone go do that.
Get as many Democrats to watch that movie as possible.
Yeah, it's The Great Awakening would be blissful ahead of the midterms. But as much as Ron DeSantis is excellent in things like critical race theory and excoriating the gender grooming of our kids, I think at this point, Trump's Schedule F, which is looking to annihilate the entire deep state and cut about 50,000 personnel, would hit them like tungsten rods from the sky. And so a little reminder of what the president has to come, which you already said, they're not after me, they're after you. I'm just in the way. And well done for President Trump for taking all the body blows at this stage. It's clearly these are partisan attacks on you, and we'll keep you updated on the situation as it unfolds. But Trump 2024.
I don't know what he can do, realistically, really and truly. So when he was in office, he put in place some of the best legislation I've ever seen. The executive order against stereotyping was fantastic. Said you cannot stereotype against race, gender, sexuality, your immutable characteristics, essentially. Yep. So that was a way of preventing things like critical race theory, gender theory, queer theory from taking over public bodies. As soon as the Democrats got in office, they tore it up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what he can do to change the system. It's against him.
It's
against
difficult.
Normal people.
You do have to have a mass exile of everyone who isn't on your side, it seems. And when you've got Biden, for example, openly sabotaging the United States energy security with not just his executive orders on oil, but also allowing Chinese transformers to be incorporated in the grid that they could just turn off remotely, you need someone like Trump to come in there and upset the apple cart and be a bull in a china shop.
In Trump's video, he says up until a couple of years ago, they were energy self-sufficient, and now they're not since Biden got in office. So things are going backwards.
Yeah. It's just open sabotage, and all we can hope is the president resumes office for a third term. So, on to Drag Planet then. We're all occupying Drag Planet at the moment. It's a pretty miserable state of affairs when the entire world is captured by people wearing woman face prancing around every institution imaginable. But why is it happening? Well, speaking of wisdom, if you'd like to sign up to lotuseaters.com, I thought I'd pick a biblical plug for the fact that you're here and we can bask in your presence, Calvin. This is the wisdom of the Book of Songs with Luke Avery, where Carl sits down and goes through biblical relationship wisdom and the glory of the difference between the sexes, which, thank God, God gave us. So, if we move on to something that you're very familiar with, Wix has had some backlash from particularly the LGB Alliance over their No LGB Without the T poster, because a building firm has sponsored Brighton Pride for some reason. If we can just scroll down to this image, John, just because it's got to be shown to be believed. Ban conversion therapy for all, but obviously not referring to the fact that children can be talked to by places like the former Tavistock Clinic into convincing them into another gender. And then No LGB Without the T from someone who sells you nails and hard boots.
Indeed. So this is troubling for a lot of reasons, but this is clearly discriminatory against lesbians, gays, and bisexual people, because it's saying that you can't support them as people with their immutable characteristics without supporting the transgender movement, which is very, very heavily contested, because we still don't know if they're talking about sex or gender, what the difference is, if there is a difference, if you can change your sex or gender. I don't believe you can, because I think it's immutable. It's part of your DNA. You either have XX chromosomes or XY chromosomes. I think the Bible is quite clear that you're born either man or woman, and that's in the image of God and the way God designed you to be. And we should teach people to love the bodies that they are in, because they are all their bodies. They're not separate to their bodies. But there are people that say, actually, I want to change my physical appearance, and you know, I'm happy to engage in that debate, but I don't think it's appropriate to say you cannot support other people unless you support these people too. That is the definition of discrimination.
Yeah, and T must stand for Trojan horse at this point. But also, we're speaking here not because we hate X group, as some clown said I did today. It's because we don't think it's compassionate to advise people to live non-correlatively with their biological sex, because gender are a set of normative ethical expectations, a set of virtues that you should try to live up to if you'd like to live an orderly and functional life. And that can be closely correlated with your sex. And this is why I think the sex-gender distinction didn't work. And that's why when you said, or can you suddenly change your sex overnight? There was in 2016, when Jordan Peterson was debating pronouns, there was this crazy trans professor who said, biological sex doesn't exist. And 6 years ago, we thought that was insane to say, and now the Labour Party can't even admit that. But I think they've moved the needle from gender to sex, because they've realised you can't, in trying to hollow out our language of these ethical expectations, because they don't want to live ethically. I mean, if you've seen an Antifa protest, they'll look terrible. They've realised you can't decouple that from the concept of sex itself, because they're so sex correlative. So they're just knocking down every pillar possible until the roof collapses on them. And we'll be in the ruins of civilization when that happens.
But let's not forget, it's not just discriminatory against LGB people. It's also discriminatory against women.
Yes.
And it's massively against women, this whole trans movement, because it's denying the fact that women are a biological entity. Women are a subset of the species. There are men and there are women, which are adult versions of males and females. Yeah. And to be born a woman is a genuine thing. However, if you can what's the active form of transgender? If you can transition, there we go. into a woman.
Transformer.
And the definition of transition is very loose, so it might mean physical surgery, it might not. If that is an option for people, that puts women, genuine biological people that were born female, it puts them at risk, because they are vulnerable to, well, let's put it bluntly, men with penises.
Yeah,
it's a biological fact that men tend to be physically stronger than women.
Yeah.
Therefore, that's why rape is an issue, because men penetrate women. And if we are allowing males into female-only spaces or men into women's spaces, we are putting women at risk.
Women's bodily autonomy and safety should not be sacrificed for the comfort of a delusional few. And notice how we're not making a feminist argument here, because, one, that's terribly cringe, but two, it's because as men, and particularly as men of faith, we recognise that sex differentials are not adversarial, they're complementary. They're a lovely thing to live in terms of an orderly life. And because we quite like women, we don't want to get rid of them, funnily enough. So every man has a stake in standing up for them.
But that's where we lost this argument years and years ago, when we stopped saying that actually men and women are different.
Yes.
The feminist argument won for the fight of equality. And equality we need to lose that word.
Nonsense.
It's a terrible word. It doesn't help.
Yep.
Men and women are not the same. We have many differences. And those differences should be celebrated, because we help do different things in the world. We help contribute in different ways to family, to society. That's a good thing. We work together. And when we lost that argument and said, okay, we're all the same, that's when they said, well, what does it matter if we change from one to the other?
That's why I like the abolition of equality from gender discourse. That's why Anna and I, my missus, for anyone that doesn't watch, we have a little phrase at home of where whenever we have a spat and she tries to hold me to the same standard, I go, no, we don't get equal, we get fair. Because you're better than me at some things.
Yeah.
I'm better than you at other things.
We're not equal. Equality doesn't exist. It's a fairy tale.
Yeah. God, I told you it'd be good. So you obviously addressed this on your spat with Peter Tatchell on GB News. Oh, this has disappeared for some reason, but it's all right. So we can go on to...
But Peter Tatchell's an interesting one. I didn't get to... next time I'm on with him, I really need to ask him about this this stance he took in the past of grown adults being able to have relationships
with people
who
this.
Are below the age of consent. Because that sounds to me like paedophilia.
Yes.
And I didn't get the time or the platform to ask the question, but I'm not comfortable being on a... I mean, I'm comfortable talking to anyone, but I'm not comfortable being on a panel with someone when I haven't expressed the obvious issue.
Yeah, I agree. And also there's, unfortunately, in the history of what I suppose we could call gay civil rights, for example, the pool has been piddled in by queer theorists. And that's not queer as a slanderous term, that's a self-identification. The likes of Gail Rubin, who first invented it, called it, she euphemized paedophilia as something like cross-generational relationships. And that's just stomach churning. And so...
But it's
just
always
like,
the end result. Paedophilia is always the end result of liberalism. That's where it always ends. Yeah. This whole love is love argument just means, you know, if you can be any gender, if you can be any race, you can be any age too. You can identify however you like. You can, you know, do whatever you like with whoever you like.
Yeah.
That's the issue with it. It doesn't work. Yeah. It's not safe.
There are some marginalizations, some classifications, some standards, which are good, funnily enough, and we shouldn't seek to liberate ourselves from them. So if we go on to the next one, not to plug my own Twitter, I just thought this was easier to consolidate.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone's confused as to why WICs are doing this, why a building firm is indulging in gender politics, it's because they've signed up to something called the WEF's ESG scores. It's this idea of stakeholder capitalism, where rather than being accountable to shareholders and delivering a profit, businesses should be subsidized by investment capital firms partnered with the World Economic Forum to deliver social activist goals to things they're called stakeholders, you know, experts in environmental policy, activists in things like gender and race equity, or corporate governance executives in governments. And if you see on the WICs reading list, if you see in the reading list below, the WICs website, their investor overview, it says, oh, you know, stakeholders, things like this. These are some screenshots from there. Our ESG is 99.8% certified. So they're clearly getting funding from someone to subsidize them doing this unprofitable anti-consumer action. And in their corporate governance brief, if we just go on to the next image, John, they just talk about, oh, our diversity and inclusion, our board composition. We've appointed females. We've appointed a non-white British ethnic group as one of our board members. And it's just, okay, well, I don't care about the race of the person running your building company. I care if you sell me nails for a cheap price.
Yeah.
Also,
this isn't just a scoring system. This is a religion. This is the cult. They're getting points. It's like a social credit system if you were an individual, but of course they're companies and they've signed up to the cult of the WEF. Like many people, like many businesses, like many individuals in government, and these people need to be held to account because we haven't democratically elected the WEF. They do not govern our country or the businesses within our country. It's disgusting what's happening right under our noses. Again, they're very transparent with what they're doing.
Yeah, it's not a conspiracy theory if they post it on their website. And also, they're unaccountable, not just as an institutional body and the money that they hold, but they're making themselves more unaccountable by tying funds to businesses that are, you know, getting hegemonic, becoming part of the monopolistic class of, if you do the right social things, we will prop you up. And so they're reducing the accountability so much that I liken the ESG system to an insurance program against get woke, go broke. It removes corporate accountability by the consumer. And so when we're all living in the pod and living rent only, then these are going to be the only places we can get our business from.
And these values are in conflict with British values and Christian values. So we need to root out the WEF.
Agreed. And I like that you said Christian values, because if you'd like to understand an explanation of what ESGs are, if we go on to the next one, John, you can subscribe to lotusesis.com to understand why ESGs are the mark of the beast. I did a little piece on this, and to sum it up, I suppose there's a gigantic leviathanic creature that emerges from the sea in the final days of the earth, and its false prophet comes around and says, oh, this is actually the one true God. If you get this little mark on your skin, you can work and trade, and without it, you're iced out of the global economy. And it sounds pretty apt.
It's quite biblical, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. But have we ever considered that I just hate gays? Is that why we're just critiquing it?
The word hate is so troubling, because whenever you don't agree with someone now, they say that you hate them or you hate their identity. Yeah. It's a nonsense.
But it's also
a
like
way of shutting down the debate.
I might hate you because you're an idiot, but I don't hate you because you're gay. But this is what some jumped up person, if we just scroll up slightly, John, some person who's running for like local government just saying, oh, would you mind if they sponsored a historical pageant or fete? Or is it just because it's gay pride and you wish it was 1964 and you could send them all to prison? Well, no, I don't wish to send anyone to prison unless you're actively grooming children. And
that's what great gay pride is. The gay pride event is a grooming event. It's a massive grooming problem. We've got these people running around twerking, half naked, sometimes fully naked in front of young children, sometimes twerking to young children. Yeah, in their kink with their latex and their dog costumes and all of that nonsense. It is a grooming event. Now, you can say that that is wrong. You can say gay pride event is wrong without saying that gay people are wrong.
Exactly.
That's a different argument altogether.
Yeah.
I happen to think that the ideal situation for a family is a man and a woman, yeah, and that's a good thing. That's a normative thing.
Incontestable.
That does, again, that doesn't mean that I hate alternative lifestyles, but people cannot argue with nuance anymore.
No, and it's also, okay, if you're conflating all gay people with groomers, that's on you, mate, because
yes,
I don't see Douglas Murray getting monkeypox, for example, because it's possible to live a fairly normal, fairly conservative lifestyle as a gay man and not indulge in this degeneracy. So no to your self-report and go away. So if we just go on to another example that I thought we'd laugh at with EA. So I understand that in your former days as a computer coding teacher, you're fairly familiar with the gaming landscape. I don't have much time to play these days.
I haven't played games in a long time, but I've still got a gaming reviews website.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. No, I saw that on your Wikipedia entry quite a while ago. But so EA are put on board with the ESG score, and of course they like to do woke corporate activism. So if we can just go on to the next one. This has led them to customize pronouns in The Sims 4, add pansexuality, do all sorts of gender activist things to make it so that you can get an immersive sim experience for the delusional. If we go on to the next article, just from Yahoo, for the last two decades, the Sims games have operated in an almost exclusively pansexual landscape. Mm-hmm. Sims were conceived as sexually fluid, exploring interests in both men and women at the player's whim. There was no option to define your sim sexuality, but your sim could sleep with female sims and male sims alike. And now, for the first time in the series history, you'll be able to get even more specific for how your sims live their lives. Players can, as of this week, dictate their sims' sexual and romantic orientation, as well as whether or not they're exploring other options. The feature has an apt launch partner with the game's High School Years add-on, out on July 28th. Players will be able to create teenage sims who live in the expansive world ruled by parents, principals, and hormones.
This is a video game sexualizing young people.
Yeah, it's coinciding with it.
Liberalism always comes down to paedophilia. It is not, you know, I mean, you labeled it the drug problem. It's not the drug problem. It's the grooming problem. Hmm. It's happening in video games. It's happening at pride events. We've got it happening in churches, which I know you're going to get to. We've got it happening in story time in schools with people in drag, men dressed as women, but scantily dressed as women, going in to read stories to young kids. And it's happening in strip clubs. We've got young kids going to strip clubs now.
That's the
and
most
parents
harrowing.
Are taking their children and supporting them throughout this degeneracy too. But we've got a worldwide grooming problem.
Yeah. Yeah. It's shocking. And then as soon as parents show up to protest it in England, for example, they're told, oh, it's just pantomime dames and the venue's changed and you're far right, even though there were some crazy groups in there.
There's a massive difference between a pantomime dame and a drag act.
Yes.
And a strip club.
Yes.
It's like it's the thin end of the wedge, and it's gradually getting deeper and deeper. And it's even reaching schools in terms of the curriculum. I'm sure you've talked about the RSE curriculum plenty of times on here. Mm. But there we have sexualization of children again, because sex ed has moved down from secondary school into primary school. Why does everything come down to sexualizing children?
It's also because the state believes they own their children. There are no taboos which cannot be discussed at home versus in a bureaucratic daycare institution. But as you said, the end result of liberalism is paedophilia. Well, what if the end result of The Sims is accidentally incest? If we go on to the next one.
Oh, dear.
This update accidentally added incest.
Accidentally? Okay.
So by somehow removing the distinctions between family members with the pronoun and sexual orientation update, Sims started dating their mothers and fathers and
so I know people who work on The Sims. I know people at EA.
Right.
I know the amount of testing that goes into each patch before it's released. There are very few features that are released accidentally.
Right. So there was another bug in here where they aged quite quickly. So it may have just been that it was a very buggy patch. But this seems like an oddly specific bug to add at this time. So apparently, earlier this week, The Sims 4 received a big free update ahead of the High School Years expansion that added curved walls, body hair, and new features. It also seems to have accidentally added incestual relationships. Sims 4 players are reporting that the game's July 26th update, some in-game characters are looking to date family members. One player shared a screenshot of an older woman who suddenly wanted to start a romantic relationship with her own son. Another player shared report with EA stating that one of their male Sims wanted to ask his twin sister to be his girlfriend. In the same support thread, a player on Xbox shared an off-putting example of a daughter wanting to date her father. quote from the article, yikes.
That is disgusting and should never have happened. But even the features that they say should have happened, body hair, the Sims were always like Barbie dolls.
Yeah.
They weren't like adults. They weren't like real featured people. They were kind of censored in a way that, because it's a children's game, it's a video game.
Yeah.
So why are they adding body hair? Again, it's sexualizing it.
Well, I know the Tumblr crowd definitely have taken to the likes of The Sims and use it as an outlet for their second lives.
Is it like a kink?
I don't even know if it's a kink. I think it's just more that because they're very insular, they like to vicariously create social situations they can control rather than venture out into the real world. And these are the exact same kind of people that when they get bored of their Sims, they'll trap them in a basement, flood it and set it on fire.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, let's be really compassionate about sexuality.
For so many years, people used to say, you know, video games are evil, video games are bad. And as someone who, you know, I was in video game development and I've got a website that I'm no longer involved with, but I own that does reviews of video games and stuff like that. I've always been supportive of video games because I thought it's a therapeutic thing. It's a good way to unwind and relax. But actually, the older I get and the more invested in my faith that I get, I come to see that maybe video games aren't a good thing after all.
Because overly indulging in them does take you away from the kind of actual real pursuits that you should be committing
to. That. Yeah. For boys and young men in particular, that sense of achievement that we get from doing things and accomplishing things in the real world, we don't necessarily seek it if we get it from video games.
Yeah.
The dopamine hits that we get from video games, but also this over-sexualization of young people as well. They shouldn't be exposed to this kind of nonsense.
No, and this is a plea to parents. Make sure you're monitoring what your kids do and don't treat it like a digital babysitter, please.
Best advice you can give. The amount of parents that I used to get when I was a school teacher that would let their kids play Grand Theft Auto or something that was clearly 18 rated or for adults is ridiculous. But it is an electronic babysitter, and children should not have access to electronic devices. They don't need them.
Agreed.
They certainly don't need devices. When
I eventually have kids,
access.
I'll give them a flip phone and that's about it.
Good.
It's Carl approach. So if we go on to the next one, I'm not just making this up. Vanguard, one of the hedge firms partnered with the WEF, is putting on family-friendly drag shows and funding abortions and diversity, inclusion and equity initiatives, also known as DIE.
Ironic. First of all, that's an oxymoron. You can't have a family-friendly drag show, just as you can't have a family-friendly sex show.
Or a family-friendly abortion. Kind of counterproductive. Vanguard, one of the largest investment management companies in the world, also partnered with WEF, has launched company-wide initiatives to push pride, abortion, and DIE on employees, their families, and their children. With $7.2 trillion in assets under management, Vanguard is rivaled only by the infamous BlackRock, the WEF's main partner. If you go onto the WEF's Twitter page at the moment, actually, their most recent tweet is from a BlackRock employee. So that's interesting.
So just looking at that, so Vanguard are pushing pride, which we know is degenerate and breaks down social norms. They're pushing abortion, which is, well, of course, evil because it's just killing of the unborn child. And they're pushing DIE, which is detrimental to social cohesion. So there's something demonic going on here. This is not good at all.
Yeah, it's about the overall abolition of the family to atomize you and make you into a worker drone. That's it. It's like Simone de Beauvoir once said, the main impediment to feminist revolution is patriarchy, property, and family. And we've got to get rid of all those. How telling. In documents obtained by Human Events Daily, a whistleblower and it was given to the post-millennial, it is revealed that Vanguard asked families, including those with children, to attend a drag show put on by the company in honor of Pride Month. In one post made by Vanguard Chief of Staff Caitlin Shaker, members of the company's Women's Initiative for Leadership Success were invited to a spectacular Pride event held at the company's main campus in Pennsylvania. So these sort of companies are the infrastructure of the Great Reset. And so this is the revelation of exactly what kind of ideology they're pushing. Live in the pod, eat the bugs, have no kids, work forever.
Be happy.
Yeah. Well, they'll be delighted. We'll be bloody miserable if this comes to pass. So that explains the profit motive for all this stuff. Unfortunately, I can't crack, and I'm so glad you're here, why somewhere like a church, a non-for-profit organization, would be ideologically captured in this way. And this I'm going to have to subject you to, I'm afraid. A drag show in Grace Church in Manhattan.
Her name is Britta Filter, and she is the Queen of New York!
So, unfortunately, All the kids were forced to go to this. So this was Grace Church High School were required to attend a Pride event on April the 27th. So it's the 6th annual Pride Chapel. And it featured a guest drag queen called Britta Filter, a.k.a. Jessie Hevea. Hevea is apparently a seasoned performer at several drag bars and events in New York City, a contestant on RuPaul's Drag Race, and national co-chair of Drag Out the Vote, so he's a Democrat Party activist. On his website, Hevea promotes Britta for bookings and also sells T-shirts, hats, and other merchandise. His social media presence and merchandise contains words and hashtags like anything but pure, water sports, fisting, balls deep, turning out, glory hole, and the phrase one in the pink, two in the stink.
It's difficult to see this as anything but Satanism. It's an affront to God. They're in a place of worship. They're in God's house. First of all, they're all wearing masks, which is a sign of...
Cowardly anyway, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not just cowardly, it's a sign of the cult. Mm. And then we've got this chap exposing himself to children in God's house. There's nothing you could do. There's a greater sin, other than actually killing children.
Yeah. How is this not warranting of Christ-like levels of turning the tables? Because all they did was sell merch. Now, that's a bad thing to do to defile the point of a church by setting up shop there. But how is this not way worse?
My house shall be used as a house of prayer. And then he turned over the tables and called it a den of thieves. And I don't know what he would do in this instance. It's disgusting. There's no other way to say it. But people celebrate this nonsense. They think it's inclusive or diverse. The people are taken.
Well, the teacher that organized this, and obviously I'm sure as you know, unfortunately, education has pretty much fallen from your time as a teacher, described themselves as the gay agenda teacher, Teacher Nguyen. And they took the opportunity after this performance to resign on the spot because the administration at the school had not been accommodating of them using non-binary pronouns.
Why is a teacher identifying as someone with a gay agenda? Surely his agenda should be imparting knowledge.
Yeah, well, he doesn't impart much knowledge because the students all complained about the fact that actually you didn't really teach us anything. So that's not all that helpful. So
these groomers, why are they always teachers as well? These groomers want access to our children to indoctrinate them, sexualize them, and break down our way of life.
I think it's because many of them who went into the university academy realized that they weren't market competitive and so flooded education as a way of an easy career and then thought, oh, this is a really good outlet for Marxist practice. Why don't I just turn the kids into adversarial revolutionaries? So I suppose if we move on just to the Times article, just as we get close to wrapping up here with Justin Welby, obviously not talking about gender here, he's talking about climate change and saying the richest clause, global warming. Those who fail to speak out about the dangers of climate change and the unethical treatment of migrants should be counted as one of the oppressors, saying that there's a selfishness of the rich who have caused the climate emergency. So with the climate change cult, with the mask cult, with the gender grooming and stuff, obviously we can see where the money is in terms of businesses, but why has the church fallen to this?
Again, liberalism. The problem we're facing right now is the church is breaking apart. So we've just had Lambeth Conference and Justin Welby failed to unite the church. The Anglican Communion is massive around the world, not just the Church of England, but 75% of the Anglican Communion around the world want to remain Orthodox. They want to focus on what's in the Bible. They want to be Christians. The minority, which tend to be in America and Great Britain, the Episcopal Church in America and the Church of England over here, want to chase societal norms. They want to do away with biblical teaching on issues like homosexual marriage. For example, it's very clear the Bible says that marriage is a union under God between one man and one woman.
Yep.
And they want to add things that aren't in the Bible because of, well, societal norms. The Christian faith should not be chasing societal norms. And the moment you try to become relevant, you make yourself irrelevant. But people like Welby haven't gotten that. I don't think he is particularly liberal himself. I think he's trying to do a balancing act, trying to please everyone. And of course, when you try to please everyone, you fail and please no one. And he should come down instead in favor of the majority, which is the orthodoxy, rather than this whatever else the alternative is. But in doing so, he's looking for avenues to gain a win. And he thinks that climate change is an easy win and the migrant so-called crisis is an easy win if he can come out and denounce the conservative government for not looking after these very important issues. That's a way for him to look like a good Christian rather than just focusing on the faith and focusing on the issues in the church. It's all a great shame. It's all a disaster. He's been a pitiful leader and I think he'll resign very soon. He just wanted to get through Lambeth. He's not very well. He's not all there, bless him. I hope the next Archbishop of Canterbury is a strong theologian, a strong Orthodox Christian, and someone who can hope to unite the church, if not get rid of the heretics.
So in the same way that we must excoriate businesses for working with the WEF, do you have...
Well, he is a WEF member.
Oh, is he an agenda contributor?
He is.
That's very interesting, because I know the Pope is, and I'm obviously very disappointed as a Catholic. That's always the proviso of being a Catholic. It's, yeah, I was raised Catholic, but the Pope is a bit rubbish.
Yeah, they've signed up to the new faith. That's the problem.
Right,
okay. That's why the old faith is dying.
So do you see much in terms of a hopeful roadmap for re-moralizing the institution, the House of God, that's fallen prey to the satanic ideology?
So the church will never fail because Christ will never let it. But the Church Universal is bigger than just the Church of England and, of course, the Episcopal Church in America and the Roman Catholic Church, indeed. Even if all three of those institutions fall, the church will not.
Yeah.
So I'm not so worried, to be honest, because there are enough Christians in the world, and then actually they're growing around the world. It's just in these Western countries, people have stopped identifying as Christians. I think for most of our time in our country, it's been a Christian country. But that's been because, in the latter few centuries, it's been because people have identified as Christian. Whether they actually went to church on a Sunday, whether they actually believed in the Trinity and the death and resurrection for our salvation or not is a different matter altogether. But people identified as Christian because it was the normative thing to do. Mm. Now it's no longer the normative thing to do, so people have stopped identifying as Christian. Mm. So I don't actually think we've seen such a drop in the faith. We've seen a drop in identities.
Right. Okay. So we're seeing almost the doubling down from self-identifying Christians in practicing and living out the lifestyle, but the sort of cultural Christianity, the water in which we all swim, has become less of a common tribal marker.
And you know that when things get as bad as they are right now, you know, the Archbishop of Canterbury practically worshipping Gaia, that the pendulum always swings back stronger in the other direction. So yep. People who are Christian, people who are Orthodox and are faithful, are going to become even more masculine in their Christianity. And that's a good thing.
That is fantastic. And so I suppose to round out with, for a bit of moralizing, if we haven't alienated all the atheists in our audience, but maybe you'll come around to our way of thinking one day, you'll have Carl back at the end of the week, I promise.
Well, it's an interesting thing, because can you actually be a conservative without being a Christian?
I don't think so.
Or without having a faith?
I think it's the Dennis Prager opinion of you can't live in a cut flower culture, because the flower will wither and die without its roots. And if it is rooted in the objective moral stance of there is a divine creator who cares for us, if you cut that off, you can hold the flower for a little while, but it will wither and die. And I think that's the era we're living in.
Without a universal truth, what do these people hold on to? I'm not denigrating anyone, but I'm always curious about this, because people say things like, I have moral values, I don't need the Christian faith. It's like, well, where do you think your moral values come from if you're in a Western society? They're very different to moral values of somewhere that they stone gays to death and things like that. And like you say, you can hold it for a while, but it will wither. So surely that needs to be regenerated.
Yeah. Well, one of the most insightful things I've ever heard was actually Nick Dixon sitting in the chair you are now. He just turned to Carl and go, you know what? Part of growing up was, I was listening to Peterson say, oh, Christianity is really useful because it's where we came from, but I just couldn't make myself believe it. And I just realized, well, why don't I just believe it? Like, make a conscious decision to believe, because that's what faith is. And ever since, my life's been a lot better. So
God bless.
Yeah, I know. He's fantastic. So speaking of God bless, I thought I'd round out with my favorite biblical quote, and this sort of transcends agnosticism and atheism, I suppose.
Because, Ephesians 6, go on.
It's fantastic. I've always loved it. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places, like Davos. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand.
Amen. I don't think that's ever been more relevant than it is today.
No.
The powers, the principalities, and the rulers of, from the darkness of the age. That is the good fight.
So, unfortunately, we're going to come to, I suppose, a more difficult segment. So, today, not to bring down the mood, but we would like to cover this one with some pretty severe gravity and give it the justice it deserves, and that is the tragedy of Archie Battersby. Archie Battersby was a young boy whose life support was turned off very recently. His mother, Polly Dance, had announced his death outside of Royal London Hospital last Saturday, and she said she was the proudest mum in the world. For those who don't know, he had been declared basically brain dead, and his mother was fighting through the courts to keep her son on life support and alive. And it's one of the flashpoint cases across Britain in the last few years, and there have been two other very prominent ones, which we'll get to soon. And I hate to reach the conclusion prematurely, but it seems very much like the state, the judicial system, and the medical establishment is letting children down. And so hopefully we can look to some alternatives for that. He'd been in hospital since he was found unconscious at his home in Southend, Essex, in April. He'd never regained consciousness. On June the 13th, doctors at Barts NHS Trust in London said he had suffered brainstem death and that his parents' request to relocate him to a hospice to die naturally or even seek care, which didn't seem possible, was impossible and actually reckless because Archie would have died in transit anyway. And then their case was escalated to the UK High Court, the UK Court of Appeal, and the European Court of Human Rights, and even the United Nations. And each time, they were shut down. So if we can move on to the Guardian's coverage of this, basically his brain death was a permanent and irreversible loss of brain function. It included the lower part of the brain that connected to the spinal cord and the nervous system. And it meant that his heartbeat, his blood pressure, the movement of his mouth was made impossible. And apparently scans had shown that his brain no longer had any blood flowing through it. So his life support was doing pretty much every function that was possible. There's a quote in this, and Rachel Clark is a palliative care doctor, so she's used to dealing with people at the end of their life. All of this was unbearably harrowing for Archie's parents, but his life support was not withdrawn because his medical team were callous, dogmatic, or cruel. Tragically, Archie was a child with no prospect of discovery. So I did just want to include that to make the point that we're not saying that the medical establishment take delight in, you know, executing a child or something dark like that. But it might be that the banality of evil, of just overlooking and shrugging because unlike a parent you don't have a personal stake in the plight of this child, may have led the judicial system to fail him and denied him the dignity of a natural death, I suppose. So this is why, in the next piece from the Times, his parents have demanded an inquiry into the death. And actually Christian Concern, who have supported some of these cases with other children as well, have been involved in the legal aid for his parents. They said that they've supported the 12-year-old boy's parents in their two-month-long legal battle with doctors and released a statement. And they said, there must be an inquiry through the proper channels on what has happened to Archie and we'll be calling for change. And despite that she said, the mother had said, she felt that her son had been deserted by the doctors and the judiciary, and she referred to it as a choreographed execution. She said that, I hope something good can come out of this tragedy and the horrendous experience we have been put through. No parent or family must go through this again. We've been forced to fight a relentless legal battle by the hospital trust while faced with an unimaginable tragedy. We were backed into a corner by the system, stripped of all our rights, and had to fight for Archie's real best interests and a right to live with everything stacked against us. So it's, I mean, you can only sympathize, I suppose, with the fact that the tragedy has been worsened by the fact that they had to fight the establishment. Unfortunately, Archie is not the first boy to be failed by the legal system and parts of the NHS. There was obviously the Alfie Evans case from quite a few years ago. I don't know if you were familiar with this at the time.
I struggle with these stories. I'm coming at this almost blind because I strongly believe in the sanctity of life and that every human life is sacred. And I channel that through fighting against abortion.
Yeah.
When these stories come up about these young children that are dying, I try to avoid them as much as possible because it weighs too heavily on my soul. Like, I'm not very good at dealing with them. But I've taken a brief look through the story of Archie just because we're talking about it today. And I think they're always difficult. There's always a lot of nuance. But I think, generally speaking, I always have to come down on the side of life.
I've come down on, and we'll see legal efforts to do this in a bit, but I've always come down on, rather than ensuring the child dies at the whim of, and I'm not saying it's flippant, but the decree of a judge or a doctor, you should allow the child to, you know, live until the parents, you know, if the parents wish is to allow their child to fight until they pass naturally.
Well, a lot of that comes back to what we were saying earlier, in that the state has replaced the parents.
Yeah. Yeah. That's unfortunately, and that we'll get onto a quote about that towards the end, which is, I don't wish to make light of it, but there is a strange idea that's captured a lot of institutions and they believe they could supplant parenthood. So this is Alfie Evans. He was born to Tom Evans and Kate James in Merseyside on the 9th of May 2016. He was admitted to Alder Hayes Children's Hospital in Liverpool in December 2016 after he had seizures, and he remained a patient in the hospital until his death. His parents said they wanted to fly into a hospital in Italy, but this was blocked by Alder Hay, the NHS Trust, who said continuing treatment was not in Alfie's best interests. They went to a high court to seek a declaration that continued ventilator support is not in Alfie's best interests, and in the circumstances, it is not lawful that such treatment continue. The 1989 Children's Act said that where the child's risk of life where the child's life is at risk, the state can and should intervene. And so they're trying to say essentially that the parents are being irresponsible in not letting him die immediately and dragging it out, which I don't think is fair. But so on the 20th of February, Justice Hayden said the doctors could stop providing life support for Alfie against his parents' wishes, so that the child could get the required peace, space, peace, quiet, and privacy to die. Mr. Evans said he believed his son was still responsive, but one of the hospital doctors said one of the problems is that Alfie's parents looked at him and said that he was breathing and feeding and moving, but they said that the only movements he had was because he was having spontaneous seizures prompted by touching, which seems, it might be medically true, but all I could imagine is, okay, what if you were wrong, unfortunately? So then they went to the Supreme Court, Court of Appeal, the ECHR, or the assistance of Christian Concern, much like Archie Battersby's case.
Yeah, Andrea and the team at Christian Concern are absolutely fantastic, and they're really doing God's work. They are.
Mm. Well, I've seen them also debate plenty of other issues. Mm. Like, for example, I know Mark Dolan's had them on to talk about the perniciousness of pornography, for example. Mm. And they are definitely doing all they can to defend the sanctity and life of children. Mm. So even if you are skeptical of faith, it's wonderful that people care passionately enough and have the conviction to do this for kids. Then the Italian Foreign Ministry actually granted Alfie citizenship and said he could have an immediate transfer to Italy to go to a hospital that was linked to the Vatican. The Pope also blessed that, Pope Francis, one of the good things he's actually done. Mm. He said, I renew my appeal that the suffering of his parents may be heard and that their desire to seek new forms of treatment may be granted. But this was dismissed by the judge, who said Alfie's a British citizen and therefore falls under the jurisdiction of the High Court. And so he died on the 28th of April 2018.
Awful.
Only aged a year and 11 months.
It was similar with baby Charlie, wasn't it? That Trump gave him the right to go over to America and he was offered American treatment, but the Brits said no.
Yeah, exactly the same. I was putting that in the next piece. Sorry. That's all right. No, don't apologise. This is where a lot of these stories add up, and we're starting to see a pattern here, unfortunately. Charlie was born on the 4th of August 2016. He had a rare medical condition, which gave him severe brain damage, limb paralysis, and the inability to breathe without a ventilator. Great Ormond Street Hospital said the moment he was diagnosed, his prognosis was bleak. Connie Yates and Chris Gard, Charlie's parents, they wanted to have Charlie moved to America to have essentially Trump's right to try policy, nucleoside bypass therapy. The US hospital offered him the treatment, and they'd actually raised in crowdfunding $1.3 million in funds taken there. So it was all paid for.
All that money.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it's wonderful that so many people were willing to donate. And it was all paid for. It was within the legal framework of the US. They were willing to attempt the transfer rather than have him certainly die. Unfortunately, the High Court again intervened. So did the Supreme Court and the European Court. And they all agreed with the doctors and said it would be irresponsible to move him. He can't even try to stay alive. We're just going to guarantee he dies rather than he might die in transit. And so he died on the 28th of July in 2017, 11 months and 24 days after the court ordered his life support be switched off. Now, the dark side of this in the next article is that Charlie Gard and Alfie Evans' cases alone cost the NHS £400,000 in legal fees. So they spent all of that money to ensure that children's life support was turned off. And I can't help but feel that that might have been a calculation, that the treatment might have been more expensive than just paying for the legal fees. And that is,
I hope not,
harrowing. No, I'd hope not as well. But when the state sees its role as superseding the interests of the parents, yeah, and also has material concerns at stake with healthcare, with the judicial system, etc., it does raise the spectre of a concerning calculus that might disregard right to life.
But in Charlie's case, they raised that £1.3 million. So it's wicked to deny them a chance to try it.
Exactly. I'd agree. And this is why my concern, as you said, the state superseding the parents. If we go to the next one, it's not directly linked, but there is something telling when Biden's education secretary, for example, said parents shouldn't be the primary stakeholder in their kids' education.
Who should be?
Exactly.
What? A parent's primary job is to educate their kids, to bring up their kids.
Yeah. And they have the most invested in the well-being of that child. As soon as you offload them to the state, apathy can set in and the kids can suffer. And so it's very concerning when this is the idea that's permeated these institutions that are meant to be intervening on behalf of kids' well-being but may not have their best interests at heart.
This is what I saw in schools all the time as a teacher. The teachers thought they knew best for the kids. They thought they knew better than the parents. They didn't want the kids to go home and get indoctrinated by their bigoted parents, so they imparted their personal values onto the kids themselves. It's like, that's not what you're there to do. You're there to teach science. You're there to teach maths. You're there to impart knowledge. You're not there to pass on values, because who's to say your values are better than their parents' values?
Mm.
It's the audacity of it.
The same as the quality of life question. Well, you're going to have a poor quality of life at home, so therefore we just switch your life support off. And
yeah.
I would never think to speak on behalf of a child and their family as to whether or not they're going to have a poor quality of life just because they've got a disability.
Who's to judge the quality of their life?
Exactly. So for a lot of these harrowing stories, I would say that parents should have the last say in the healthcare and lifespan of their terminally ill children. There's a piece in the Mail that says we've got to find a better way of handling these tragic cases. And something has come up. If we can go on to the next link, please, John. Well, first of all, Jeremy Hunt has actually showed a rare bit of humanity. Wow. He said, over the weekend, I raised the cases of Alfie and Archie. The writer said he raised the case of Alfie and Archie with Jeremy Hunt, who has said that now, as the Commons Health Select Committee head, such cases represented the worst of NHS paternalism, and he will be asking his colleagues to consider whether we should look at this as part of a future inquiry. There's also the idea of Charlie's Law that's been supported by the parents of Charlie Gard has been proposed.
The politicians get my blooming nerves. I shall ask my colleagues whether we should be asking, whether we should be looking at... Yeah. No, just look into it. Just sort it out.
Yeah, kick the can down the road. Meanwhile, more children could be affected like this, which is inexcusable. It would basically allow the parents would have the final say in such extreme cases where their kids are terminally ill and they want to take them abroad to try and save their life. So Charlie's Law sounds like a great measure in correcting some of this. But the dark underbelly of this is, as we've seen, as you said before in the prior segment about online grooming and things like this. Children are being subjected to a lot of things, including social media. And while the online harms bill is not the way to tackle it, but the dark secret is, and we have to say allegedly here, because apparently TikTok has been on Alfie's mother's case about this because they're saying it doesn't exist. But if we go to the next piece, apparently, Archie's mother has alleged that he was trying to do a blackout challenge on TikTok.
Okay.
So he constricted the blood flow around his neck to try and make himself pass out on camera.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's what caused him to never wake up. And so she says, you know, so TikTok is responsible in part for not...
TikTok is evil. TikTok is the Chinese communists subverting our culture. But TikTok is not responsible. Parents are responsible.
I agree.
I'm sorry. Parents need to stop giving their children access to the internet that is unfiltered without supervision. And that means games consoles, smartphones, tablets, laptops. They're not there to babysit your child because they are indoctrinating your children with evil.
Yeah, I agree. And I would say definitely that TikTok should not be hosting physical harm on their platform and allowing children from 13 on here.
And that's the purpose of TikTok. The whole point of TikTok is to undermine our way of life. As you well know, the Chinese version of the app is very wholesome. It has time limits, so you can't just keep scrolling indefinitely and get that dopamine hit. It teaches about home improvement and personal improvement and academic improvement, whereas TikTok is all about scantily clad women twerking or, you know, sexualizing young girls or dangerous trends to follow. And it's all about pushing the woke narrative around gender theory, queer theory, and critical race theory. It is literally an app designed to subvert our culture. Mm. And we're letting young kids scroll through it for hours on end every day.
Yeah, it's destabilizing the identities of children and also putting them at physical risk with things like the socket challenge, where children electrocute themselves, the salt and ice challenge to burn themselves like it's Fight Club, the nutmeg challenge involving taking lethal amounts of nutmeg, and the antihistamine challenge where you take loads of pills to induce cardiac arrest.
The Chinese are laughing at us. Yeah. You don't need an old-fashioned war anymore.
No.
You just let the enemy kill itself.
Yeah, it's fifth generational warfare. Exactly. TikTok says, oh, these dangerous trends are never on our platform and they remove contact. Any content which promotes dangerous behavior. But
and could cause harm. Right. So let's get to that, because what TikTok do remove is content that would cause harm to in the reverse. So anything I put on TikTok gets removed.
Yeah.
Anytime I say, look, a man has an XY chromosome, or a man is an adult human male, or a woman is an adult human female, or say anything that they would perceive as non-woke, it gets taken down. But woke stuff gets promoted. These trends get promoted. Sexual degeneracy gets promoted. So it's actually a nonsense that remove any content that promotes dangerous behavior or could cause harm. Yeah. It's their definition of harm that is wrong.
Yeah. So if we just go on to the final piece, TikTok's being sued actively by other parents who have lost children to the blackout challenge. Lalani from Temple, Texas, died on the 15th of July 2021. Police determined her death was a direct result of attempting TikTok's blackout challenge. TikTok was also sued in May by the family of a 10-year-old Nyla Anderson, who died last December after reportedly attempting the same challenge. So as we said, we're not going to be cruel to Holly Dance by saying, you know, lesson learned too late, don't allow your children on these platforms. No. But until... For example,
other parents can take notes.
Yeah, exactly. And until, for example, incumbent Prime Minister Liz Truss possibly makes good on her pledge to ban TikTok, don't let your kids near this nonsense.
Yeah. Well, Trump was going to ban it, wasn't he? That was a great idea.
It was.
And I know I mentioned that I've got an account on there, but all I try to do is try to add some balance.
Yeah, subvert the subverters.
Yeah, I promote my GB News content on there. I don't create anything new for TikTok. Mm. But also there's the worry that actually they're data mining us as well. Yep. If you install the app on your phone, the Chinese are grabbing all of your information.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked. It's a national security risk. So while we sympathize with all the parents, more, of course, must be done at this point. Charlie's Law seems like the most sensible way to give parents the right over whether their children live or die, whether they have the right to try to fight a terminal illness. And also, it seems like TikTok as an instrument of subversion, there is no salvaging it. We endorse parents taking their children off the platform and ultimately the platform being excoriated from the West entirely.
Yeah.
And on that dour note, we'll move on to the video comments. Basically, some of our subscribers have sent some stuff in because they pay a subscription fee, and we hope that these are apt.
Oh dear, I'm sure.
So regarding Saudi Arabia's The Line super project, maybe I just like megastructures and I'm biased, but I genuinely don't see how this gives them any more power than they already have in their despotic country. I'd be much more worried about the normalization of digital-only payment processing, which is happening. Credit cards can be shut off, and that's a lot more dangerous.
So have you seen the Saudi Arabian Line?
I have. I have indeed. It's dystopian.
Yeah.
It looks like something out of a sci-fi movie. Everyone just living so compact. It looks very well designed, but that's not what humans are about. We're supposed to live in space, in greenery. We're supposed to live in communities. In fact, I think we've got it wrong all over the world. Westminster is pretty good because we've got height restrictions. But when you look at countries that have just built upwards, it's a mess. We need to build outwards. We need to give people space to build communities and parishes and have neighbors and interact with other human beings. Mm. There's something soulless about high-rise apartment buildings. Mm. People have lost that connection to each other. People don't know their neighbors anymore. It's terrible. But he's got a good point on the cashless society.
Agreed. Yeah.
If we go cashless, if we allow them to push us in that direction, and they've used COVID as an excuse, for example, they increased the credit limit on contactless, on tap, on your
200.
On your smartphones, and lots of shops have said we don't want cash because it could contain the woo flu. They're using it and pushing it because, of course, if we're only using digital payments, first of all, they can monitor all of our spending, and secondly, they can push for that social credit system that they have in China, in that eventually they want us to go to a digital currency that the government controls. The Bank of England have clearly put this out there. Again, it's all transparent, that it will only be able to spend money on appropriate things. For example, if it's deemed inappropriate to eat meat, we won't be able to spend money on meat. We'll have to buy bugs instead.
Well, the ESG article I put out about the Mark of the Beast actually contains in it a link to the WEF's 2016 consultation with the UK Cabinet Office and a bunch of banks, which says that you need a global citizen's identity in order to vote and also a corporate identity to do interactions with the approved corporations. And this will be linked to your digital citizen's ID wallet. And this was the Cameron government.
Global citizens, what is this? One world government?
Yes.
It's revelations.
Yeah, exactly. On to the next one, I suppose.
So Connor says that the Line City would devolve into a mouse utopia, but I don't think so. Assuming it's built and assuming that the automated systems actually work at first, the problem the people there will have that the mice didn't is maintenance. The mice didn't have to do anything to get the food and water, while the people there will at least have to maintain the automated systems giving them food and water. There will likely be small pockets of mouse utopias within the city, but they'll likely stop doing maintenance on the automated systems and they'll fall apart almost immediately. The city will still fail horribly though.
Yeah, but very few people. They're going to be like the keepers in Mass Effect. You know, weird bug people walking around doing the maintenance. They're going to be the great unwashed crawling through ducts like it's, you know, the aliens colony. Yeah. But the most people will just think, oh, I get my vegetables on the subscription service. That's actually one of their things. You've got to sign up to a subscription service to get 3 meals a day of AI-grown vegetables. And because everything will be AI-controlled, people get so complacent about all their resources being delivered to them that they'll become either Wall-E creatures or all the beautiful ones obsessed with grooming themselves, or they'll be the people that smashed up Dostoevsky's Crystal Palace just to make something interesting happen.
Because of where it is, people with more money and influence will get better services.
Yeah.
People with less money and influence will get worse services.
They'll be able to escape as well. Like, what are you going to do? Scale the walls of the wall and cross the Saudi desert if you've got no way to access transport because your social credit system's shut off.
Disgusting.
Next one.
Hey guys. Just got my new issue of Men's Health. Thought I'd read you an article.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
More Americans than ever fear that global warming will affect them personally, and it's giving rise to a new field of study called eco-anxiety. And another. Generations of racism and oppression have created a devastating healthcare crisis with indigenous communities. This is a men's magazine.
Yeah, it's ideological homogeneity. That's it.
Yeah, it sounds like a woke magazine. Eco-anxiety. Everything's an anxiety now, isn't it?
Yeah. Everything's an overdiagnosed mental health condition. Yeah. Definitely. I don't know if you saw it's John Boyega on the front cover. Your take as a man of color, I suppose. Have you seen the trailer for The Woman King?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
What's a woman king?
Queen? One would think. Go and look it up. It's a film. It's basically going to be the Black 300, apparently, okay, about the Dahomeys. From King Gezo of Benin in Nigeria,
yeah.
Who were a slave owning kingdom, and they're trying to represent them as an incredible female warrior tribe, even though they said the slave trade is the lifeblood of my people. I will not give it up when the British Empire tried to dismantle it. And then when the Dahomey Amazons, the female warrior force, tried to fight the French lost 6 of their soldiers. The Dahomeys were wiped out in an afternoon.
Yeah, so, sounds dire. I won't watch it.
No.
I think Mr. Lang here does a pretty good job of summarizing the problems Carl's having with the Tory government at this point, where somehow we have a country with a supermajority of conservative population who have elected a conservative government, yet because like 15% of that government is an organized minority controlling all of the decision-making levers, they're able to basically inflict leftist policy on a country that's ostensibly voted for in a supermajority against left-wing policies.
That's a pretty accurate assessment, I think, as well. Within the Conservative Party itself, you have these, the permanent MPs like Michael Gove or Gavin Williamson. So after Gavin Williamson got fired, for example, when I went to Conservative Party conference, he was sort of standing around in the foyer, yeah, and everyone was walking up to him, patting him on the back, going, oh, you did a great job as education secretary.
Really? He was a terrible education secretary.
Well, he's terrible at all the jobs he did. He got embarrassed on GMB as well. But I think these kind of people know where the bodies are buried. And so they can drive hard in terms of progressive policy to enrich themselves, even though the British public are decidedly anti-woke. And that's why you see Rishi Sunak, I've called him Schrodinger Sunak, and we're probably covering this tomorrow, because having never said a word on grooming gangs or wokery, now he's saying life sentences, political correctness. It's because you're pandering to a base that you know is far more base than you are.
Yeah, where has he been all this time? Yeah, populism only works in his favour when he wants it to.
Yeah.
I think our political system's broken. As a traditionalist, as a conservative, I want to protect our institutions. I think that our parliamentary democracy helped spread democracy around the world, whether that's a good or a bad thing, that's debatable. But I'm not sure first past the post works anymore.
No.
Not sure we get the representation we deserve.
I agree. Well, it's the old line of, okay, how come Farage during his time at UKIP get, was it 4 million votes but 0 seats?
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. It?
So I know this is a bit old, but for y'all covered the Alex Jones case. And for Austin, though, a lot of the judges there are pretty partisan. A lot of them have been caught wearing the little feminist hats and all that. And mark my words, Austin's going to basically be the next San Francisco, but a lot more worse, because unlike San Francisco, where everyone's moving out, a lot more money is moving in. And that book over there on the shelf, reading it, is basically it's what's coming on in Austin.
Agreed. And so I got some flack, especially in the YouTube comments, about saying that Alex Jones was most definitely wrong for saying Sandy Hook didn't happen. And you can enjoy the man's memes without saying that that's the right thing to do, because he clearly defamed in believing in that conspiracy theory, the parents of those. But the trial had no level of legitimacy. And in the same way that the Justice Department is politicizing going after Trump, it doesn't matter if you like the person, it matters about the rule of law and principles, and they've sadly been abandoned.
It's deeper than that. The problem here is hero worship. Like, you can think someone is pretty sound on most issues, but they're still a human being, they're still fallen, they're still being wrong on some things, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And we need to be able to forgive people for being wrong and move past it. It's just, with Trump, I support many of his policies. I think he's a fantastic politician. Mm. I didn't support him at first. I don't like him as a person. I think he's very crass, brass, very American, to be honest, yeah, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, very true.
It's not compatible with our values in a lot of ways, which is fine. But when he got into office, he started doing really good things, and I support the policies. I support his It's politics, but I don't worship him as a hero. And we always fall into that trap. It's happening a lot on our side of the debate with Elon Musk at the moment. People are holding him up as the great savior of things like Twitter. Like, yeah, he might have some good influence, but don't fall for him as a god.
Yeah.
You know, on the transhumanism, he's going to be an enemy of ours, I think.
On the same with the Chinese social media, where he's praising the CCP just to secure contracts in Shanghai.
Not good.
Not a good guy. No. And Trump, again, he can get Operation Warp Speed wrong. He can get state spending wrong. But hopefully, I've not yet, unlike most of the culture, abolished the possibility of forgiveness from my heart. So I'd like to see him possibly turn it around. Mm. So some website comments before we wrap up. Lord Nerevar, awesome to see Calvin in the studio today. I have endless respect for his work he's been doing since he first came across him. It's almost enough to make me forget about the unending pain caused by living in the UK in 2022. Isn't that the truth? Definitely flippant. Mildly off topic, what do you think with regards to the concept of non-conforming Christian, deriving an ethical framework from Christianity but not believing in God as an entity? Could we, in part, define God as an excuse for families not related to come together?
There's no such thing as a non-conforming Christian. You can't say you're a Christian, you don't believe in God. That's just not Christianity. Call it something else. Invent your own religion if you want to, that's fine, but it's not Christianity.
Yeah, it's if you're sort of like legacy agnostic, sure, but again, I would encourage people to just, you know, take the leap of faith and go, okay, why don't I just try believing and see if it works?
It's like this whole cultural Christianity thing. Like, unless you believe that Christ died and was resurrected for our salvation,
what's the foundation? Exactly. So someone's asked a question about the Global Anglican Future Conference as well, funnily enough. Hi, Padre. Have you considered becoming a member of GAFCON?
I am a member of GAFCON. I was ordained through a body of GAFCON. The Church of England didn't want me because I wasn't woke. And we had a long battle, mainly over them saying that the church is institutionally racist and me saying it wasn't. And then the three white bishops declining to ordain me to prove themselves right. I entered GAFCON. There are two arms of GAFCON in the UK. There's the Anglican mission in Europe, so the AMI routes or ACE, the Anglican Convocation in Europe, and then there's the Free Church of England, which have been around since 1844. So I went with the Free Church of England route, but I'm definitely under the GAFCON umbrella, and I work hard to promote GAFCON as a body because they are orthodox, they are Christians, and they're not pandering to woke nonsense.
I think you're going to be one of the only faith-based events at Conservative Party conference as well, because Conservative Party have practically all but abandoned Christianity.
But this is the problem. Like, who's defending conservative values? The Conservative and Unionist Party aren't. The Church of England aren't. These are the bodies that we would expect to defend conservative values. Who is? Hmm. We have to do it ourselves.
One honourable mention from General High Ping as well before we wrap up. Hello, Lotus Eaters. I do hope you've upheld the time-honoured tradition of forcibly offering tea and cake to the clergyman, whether they like it or not. We did offer you a cup of tea when you came in, but you came in with a Costa plastic cup just to spite the planet.
Yeah. So what?
And then just a couple more, I suppose. Alpha of the Betas, Calvin has the perfect framing for DEI and grooming, degenerate and demonic. It's a pleasant change to see a guest not afraid to speak the truth. And then just lastly, I suppose, Justin B. I think a conservative doesn't need to have faith, but they have to respect the values of faith. They could believe in a deity without agreeing to any particular religion or belief.
No, because that's idolatry. That's making yourself a god. It doesn't work.
No, that's the exact thing that Marx did when he said he wanted to displace God and rotate around himself as his one true son.
Yeah.
And look at where that got him. So on that note, Calvin, sincerely, thank you very much for coming in. I'm sure our audience will have converted by the end. And if not, we'll just have to beat him into shape, won't we? But thank you all very much for watching. We'll be resuming tomorrow at 1 o'clock. I'll be on with Nick Dixon. Appreciate all of your patience. And go and subscribe to lotususers.com for more content. Until then, goodbye.
Thank you. God bless.